With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings-on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm John McKenzie, the Everyone Is Injured of the podcast. And I'm joined by the Everyone Is Injured of the podcast, Tom Woodhead. And finally, the Everyone Is Injured of the podcast. It's Joe Hill, and I've just completely ruined my voice. Joe, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay this morning. I think the one positive that I can take is that I feel like I'm growing into the Darren Driver spot of the introduction so much that Tom suggested that I'm wearing my Darren Driver top as I've come on this podcast just wearing a casual hoodie, which is Darren's sort of preferred clothing of choice. So I feel like I'm really growing into this spot now.
Yeah, you're also living in a space that looks like Darren's loft.
That's true.
I think that was more what Tom was pointing out. But Tom, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. It's nice to finally have equality on the introductions, even if it is in the form of a primal scream.
I tell you what, that has really taken a lot out of me. Just before I came on, I was complaining about a sore throat. And actually, it's done the world of good. And Tom, you're a man who knows all about the use of primal screams in art. I wonder whether or not you've ever encountered the remedial aspects of just screaming, opening your throat and going for it. That just sounds awful, doesn't it?
Well, the trick is to scream from the diaphragm, John.
Is that right? That's the forward rusher way. Well, I'm glad I got your approval on that. But we cannot talk about the vagaries of the early 90s pop scene.
Early 90s? Fuck off.
Early 80s. No. When was it? 2000s?
Mid-noughties.
Mid-noughties?
Yeah.
I'm miles off. Anyway, we can't talk about the mid-noughties rock scene. Punk scene? How did you self-define?
John, this is awful. Stop.
I realise that you guys are way too edgy to be encompassed by simple genre, so I'll leave this one. But something I do know a little bit more about than music is football. Not much more, but some. And this week we do have to talk about Leeds versus Aston Villa on Friday. A game that I think probably has changed in our outlook, given the injuries that we have. The injuries I've got written down are, so Liam Cooper obviously was supposed to play on Monday, got injured in the warm-up, which isn't really a very good sign, I don't think, that he's going to be ready for Friday, but we'll see. Diego Llorente, we assume, is still injured. No doubt there's the possibility he could have come back from his injury that he picked up on international duty. It would be remarkably hilarious if Diego Llorente never played for Leeds because he picked up long-term injuries. But let's not think about that right now. Pascal Strauch got injured in the build-up to the goal, funnily enough, on Monday. And also Calvin Phillips got injured when he got taken out by, I think it was also Raul Jimenez. So not only has Raul Jimenez sunk our whole team, he's also injured two of our players. So that's where we're at. And that's a very negative way to start the podcast, but Tom, inject some positivity into us, please. Is there anything good that we can talk about here?
Well, it can never be good that a load of players are injured, can it? I sort of have a feeling that Cooper might play. You say he got injured in the warm-up. As far as I know, it was more that he was feeling an injury that he already had and thought he could play through and then decided he couldn't. So I'm sort of vaguely hopeful that he'll play through the injury, essentially, which might be bad long-term, but considering the position we're in, I think it might be necessary.
Joe, how do you feel about the injury situation at the moment? Is it just really bad luck, or were we right to say that the squad maybe is not as deep as it should be?
I'm not sure it would be fair to say that about the squad depth, considering that at the start of the season I was very much happy with our centre-backs situation, having four and having two for each position. Forshaw was potentially the cover for Phillips, and I guess Stroik was as well. So I think it's unlucky that, you know, they've all happened at once. But we are recording this before Bielsa's presser, and he could well come out this afternoon and say that Stroik is fine and that Cooper, like Tom was saying, Cooper was taking it easy on Monday and he feels fine to play on Friday. So if that is the case, then I don't think it will be too bad at all, because it'll just be that Stroik covers for Phillips, which obviously is a big loss, but our centre back partnership, the starting two will still be the same. So all eyes on Bielsa's presser this afternoon, or I guess it would have already happened if you're listening to this.
Yeah, on to happier but also injury news. Darren was desperate that we talked about Adam Forshaw's barrow. For those of you who don't know, Adam Forshaw, I think it was on his Instagram or maybe his wife's Instagram, but he's been pumpkin picking. I guess we're approaching the Halloween season. They took their son pumpkin picking, and Adam Forshaw wheelbarrowed his son and a number of pumpkins across a field, which I don't know about you guys, but I'm extremely worried about his future health prospects. We did have a long conversation about how many months that will have set him back. I'm hoping he's okay. Anyone got any thoughts and prayers for Adam Forshaw, the artist formerly known as Adam Forshaw, I should say?
Now you've said that, there's going to be some in-depth analysis on how many pumpkins exactly were in that wheelbarrow and how much they might weigh and how what the strain on his thigh muscles. So we really need to look into that in great detail before we can say anything.
Yeah, the thing is, footballers are always banned from riding motorbikes and going skiing and stuff like that, aren't they? So maybe they need to relook at his contract.
Yeah, he's not got pumpkin barrowing as a clause in his contract. And then the only other noteworthy thing that happened this week was that the Premier League released their list of 25 squad members and then under 21s members for each club. There was great joy to be had in Chelsea putting Petr Cech in their squad in the inevitable situation where they have to play Kepa. But the interesting aspect from Leeds United's point of view was that J. Roy Grott was on the list. J. Roy Grott, who I was hearing rumours of yesterday, is currently injured because he had a botched surgery on his knee or something. So apparently won't be around for a while, but he's there. If this injury problem continues, you know, we can almost field J. Roy Grott in the central midfield system. Everyone must have some positive memories of J. Roy Grott. I know you wanted to talk about him, Tom.
Well, he's such an Adonis, isn't he? I remember when he first came in, I just thought, Jesus Christ, this guy is a perfect physical specimen. And it was a time when we signed three strikers at about the same time. We signed Grott, Ekuban and Lasoga on loan, all within a space of a week or two. And I remember discussing with a mate of mine, who's going to be the one who's... And I was like, yeah, I reckon it's going to be Grott. Check him, like, just physically he seems like he's got everything, but unfortunately he didn't turn out to have anything else.
Caleb Ekuban now tearing it up in the Turkish league. And looking very good. Lasoga, I'm not sure where he's at, probably back in Germany, I suspect, but J. Roy Grott is still on the books at Leeds and is still presumably a physical specimen. So at some point in this season, if the injury list continues to grow.
I can tell you that Pierre-Marcel Lasoga is in Qatar. He's playing for Al Arabi in Qatar.
Of course he is. I can imagine him loving that lifestyle. Bit of football in the evening, out by the pool at the weekend. Get his towel out nice and early. But yeah, the rate that, at which our injuries are growing, I suspect that being a physical specimen will be enough to recommend you for the starting 11. So keep your eyes out for J. Roy Grott. But we should talk about Villa, because this is, of course, a Villa preview. And this week I was lucky enough to talk to James Rushton, who's the audience engagement producer at Reach PLC and a regular on the Claret and Blue podcast. And this is what he had to say. So, James, hi, how are you doing?
I'm all good, John, except for the fact I can't watch Villa's next game on my Sky Sports or BT Sports subscription. Got to shell out a few quid for it, I think. Villa versus Leicester as we're recording. So, yeah, I'll be missing out today, bar the radio. But apart from that, I'm all good. The start to the season has been fantastic. Football's back. It's strange, but yeah, enjoying myself, and I hope you are as much as you can right now.
So you're not going to pay for the pay-per-view then?
No, I think with the amount of blustering I've put out on social media, I'd be not necessarily a hypocrite if I paid for it, but I feel it'd be a tough sell for me to now go out and buy it. But I've donated the money I would be paying, so the $14.95 is going to the Trussell's Trust food banks in the local area. So yeah, I'll be getting the live blogs up from the local media, and of course the radio, because I can't exactly say I will be pirating the game live on air. But no, I will be following it via different mediums this time around, which is strange. But look, I grew up in a house where we couldn't afford Sky Sports. We had to listen to the game on the radio. We had to rely on the paper the next day to tell. So look, it's nothing strange. It's just a bit odd in these modern times.
Yeah, it should be an interesting experience, shouldn't it? I also grew up in a family that never had Sky TV, and I spent a lot of my childhood listening to football on the radio. And I have a bit of a soft spot, really, for radio broadcast.
Yeah, for me it was just the radio. Like, we'd have the radio on, not like some family and just after the Second World War, but like we would put a big radio set on and just listen, because like we'd have to go down the pub for Sky Sports, and I think Villa games were the local derbies, because Villa were pretty crapping when I first got into football. So 2002 Villa were really, really bad, and I'm not just talking about post 2010 bad, I'm talking about just useless, like just may as well not exist bad. They were terrible. And we had the first second city derby, so Villa versus Birmingham City, for a good few years, and we had to watch it in a pub. And it obviously kicked off because it's before 2007, and I think there was it was before the 2012 Olympics, I think, before violence ever existed or political violence ever existed in the mainstream. So we had to go to pubs and watch these games, and it always kicked off. So it was never good to take me as a kid down there. So it was just the radio and the paper, John.
Yeah, it should be fun. Anyway, talking about Villa, you've mentioned that they were bad in the past, but when it comes to this season, actually been remarkable. Quite the start to the season. Surely it can't continue like this.
I mean, I hope so. I hope we beat, you know, every team 7-2. I hope we're champions at the end of the season. But look, I think I got ragged a bit on when I went on BBC Radio Leicester the other day, and I said, look, it is an anomaly. It's an outlier. It sticks out. And I was like, surely not. Like, is it just confidence? And I'm like, look at Villa wouldn't have done this last season. Chances are they might have done it to another team, like a West Ham, or, you know, I don't want to say Leeds because I know this is a Leeds podcast and I'll just get hammered for it. But, you know, a team that has just been recently promoted, for example, like Norwich last year. But, you know, to say, yeah, we'll do it again. It was against Liverpool. It was a really odd one. It was a really strange one. But the fact it was that it was against Liverpool makes it just such a strange outlier. And I know that this season has been strange. It's thrown up a lot of strange results. It has been a season like Nova, quite like the end of last season. Look, it was a really strange one. It's not going to happen every week. I'd like to think we can continue in the same vein. We can be confident, we can be quick on the break, we can be strong, solid, and have the right momentum. But look, football ebbs and flows. It's a momentum game. We just got to ride it as hard as we can and hope it doesn't end against you guys.
So we're recording this before the game against Leicester. So far, you've had a couple of games against what looks like could be relegation strugglers in both Fulham and Sheffield United. You also had that 7-2 victory over Liverpool. I'm not really one to talk about momentum, but it does look as though the manner in which you stayed up last season has carried you into good form in this season. How do you see this season going? Are you treating this season as a bit of a bonus?
It's hard because when we came up, I think there was a lot of kind of PR spin put up on our promotion, like we're here to stay. We're not just here to take part either. We're here to reward investors and shareholders and fans and people following the club by playing in style. And look, you can do that in the Championship. You can set up, and whatever type of team you are, you can set up to play good football. You might not win every game, but you can entertain. If you take that risk in the Premier League, there's a good chance you could end up like Villa, which is... you look good against Spurs, you look good against Arsenal, then winter hits, you get injuries, and you're not winning any games, and it doesn't look like a win is going to come from anywhere. So it's an important, you know, momentum is incredibly, incredibly important in football. You can get relegated purely. If you're a club of a certain size, I wouldn't say certain size because Villa and Leeds are massive, but, you know, if you're a club of a certain status and like a recently promoted team who probably doesn't have that room in the wage bill yet due to, you know, the amount of concurrent seasons you have to have in the Premier League to be able to compete, you know you can be relegated on bad momentum purely. You could just have a really bad luck, really bad injuries, a really bad run of fixtures, and suddenly you're not finding a win from anywhere. You're not a confident team anymore, and you're just getting beat around every week. Villa before lockdown were that team, like against Leicester. So again, we recorded before Leicester, but last time we played Leicester, so this was March 2020, seems like years and years ago, but March 2020, like, we looked relegated. We had Pepe Reina doing God knows what in goal. You know, it was 0-0, and he's halfway to the midfield line to clear Harvey Barnes' tracing run. And then we go down to 1-0, and it just carries and carries on, and we don't get back into the game. And we're humiliated, and we're gone. And we took risks that didn't pay off. We brought Danny Drinkwater into the team, and he just wasn't at the standard. And, you know, fair play, he tried, but he wasn't at the standard. We took massive, expensive risks. And it wasn't in the summer transfer window we did that. It was in the January transfer window when we needed to patch up. We didn't get any quality in at all, probably bar Reina, who wasn't necessarily that much of an improvement anyway. It was just having someone of a certain standard in goal. That momentum, Jan, massively important. The way it changed after lockdown, we suddenly grew up, I think, a little bit. We just suddenly went, right, we can't run at these teams with six, seven people running up the pitch at these teams expecting to outscore them. We simply can't do it. We don't have the level of fitness, not least the level of confidence to take these teams on. Because when Villa took a team on, the other team would simply score one or two by the way of Villa just pushing up the pitch. Villa really just went, right, we'll just give... if the other team wants the ball, we'll give it them. They can have all the ball they want. We will style in our short moments. We will defend a little bit deeper. We will have muscle in the middle of the pitch. We'll use each player to the best of their capabilities. And I think that really changed during after lockdown. The way we came out, probably against Sheffield United, I know we got a great deal of luck, but look, the way we played in games, there was a few outliers. Look, we sucked against Manchester United. We really did. We had a really bad penalty call, and it looked like we was going down. Against Everton, we fluffed our chances, and we had draws. We got a draw when we should have won. But the momentum we gained from the victories against Arsenal, drawing against West Ham, and beating Crystal Palace, that momentum is key, because it said to Villa, look, the changes you've made have paid off. Like, you look good against Wolves and Chelsea, you didn't get the results, but then you look better and better, and you got the results you deserved. That momentum was incredibly key.
There was obviously a lot of questions about Dean Smith over the course of the last season. Are you still happy to have him as your manager?
Yeah, I am. I think he manages in the right way, and when I say that, I don't mean he's, you know, there's not many managers like your Bielsa who will have the same commitment to every phase of the game. You know, there's some managers like Steve Bruce who will be happy to delegate and then take the reins on match day and take the reins in the transfer window. Dean Smith is a delegator in the right way. I think he knows his weaknesses. He knows his weaknesses really, really well. And he'll delegate certain aspects to managers who he can then, who will then feed him a report. It's not like he doles off the task and goes, right, I don't want to hear about that, then you deal with it. He will get the report back and look at how he can change the process to make it work better for everyone. He's a real democratic leader at the heart of Aston Villa. He's the soul of Aston Villa. I think Aston Villa and Dean Smith have found like a really good fit. And I think there isn't many teams that find the manager that's right for them. You know, that manager could be a 5 out of 10 if they're managing Leeds or Sheffield United or even at Arsenal. You know, they can just get successful in a job and move on and not be at that same level. But I feel like with yourself and Leeds and Bielsa, you just found that perfect fit. He just embodies the identity somehow of that football club, and I feel like Dean Smith is Aston Villa. So I am very, on that level, I am very happy to have him. I think there's been a lot of weaknesses though, and I feel like these weaknesses, we shouldn't judge managers on single games, but if you look at the points we finished on last season and the teams we lost to, John, we lost to Watford shortly after Boxing Day. We lost twice to Bournemouth. So, you know, three games there, you've handed your relegation rivals 9 points. Those two Bournemouth games, if Villa just perform a 6 out of 10, they survive. Like, if you draw those games 0-0, Villa survive. They gave away, you know, they built Bournemouth season. 6 points would have made such a massive difference to Bournemouth, and then Villa gave them up, because otherwise Bournemouth would have been cut adrift a long time ago without the points Villa handed to them. Look at the 3 points they gave Watford as well. I mean, over the course of the season, if Villa just didn't lose those games, you'd be talking, the way we reflect would be so different. I think Dean Smith probably got that bad hand by us Villa fans, because you look at the season as a whole, when you're losing your 5 games or whatever in a row, it can look bad, but looking back on the context, 3 games there, and you've just thrown 3 games there where you just completely thrown it away. I feel like, on the whole, Dean Smith has done a very good job at Aston Villa. I think in the little pockets of time where you can go, right, he's got to go, like after the Leicester game, we can judge him quite harshly, but as a whole, I think they found a really good fit, and I hope that he can kind of fix those faults that he's had in the previous seasons, where he's been too probably brave, or you might want to call it naive, where he hasn't known his limits, and he's trusted too much in the squad, where he's probably not had faith in certain other members of the squad. I feel like we should hopefully see him fix those this season. I'd like to see a bit of growth from him moving forward, but yeah, right now, very, very happy.
So the transfer window's just closed fully. Are you happy with the business this summer?
I think very pleased. Ollie Watkins is a really good signing. I think he got off the mark really well. He scored in a League Cup, of course, but he got off the mark in the best possible way in a Premier League. You know, first goal he scores is the precursor to a hat-trick against the champions. So, you know, we'll have to see if that continues. But he's brought a lot of good things to Villa, namely not just the pace, of course. I think just calling him a fast player is lazy. It's the complete package, the work rate, the attitude he takes to the game, the constant need for improvement. Like he doesn't want to embarrass his past self. He was plucking around at Western Supermare FC, you know, trying to get a few games there on loan from Exeter. He doesn't want to embarrass his past self. He wants to constantly achieve, and I think that's such a perfect attitude for him to have. Very humble, very nice, very tough to deal with on a pitch, and I feel like that is the perfect Dean Smith signing. It cost a lot of money, but I feel like you know, he's perfect player for Aston Villa. I know Leeds were probably in for him. I think, I don't want to say that you missed out, but I think you got the right deal with the player. I think Rodrigo, the player you signed, if you could have signed Ollie Watkins or Rodrigo, you should have signed Rodrigo, because I think he would fit you more, whereas Ollie Watkins fits us more. I don't think there's much like separation between them in that. I don't think Ollie Watkins would have been brilliant at Leeds in the way he'd be brilliant at Aston Villa, for example, whereas Rodrigo probably wouldn't have succeeded anyway at Aston Villa, but be a perfect fit for Bielsa's Leeds. I hope that's the way it turns out anyway. I hope we can both have a very happy season with our respective signings there. But likewise, I think, you know, you have to go for play your best hand. I don't think any side lost out there. They got what they wanted. With Villa, Ollie Watkins, fantastic. But the guy I really want to speak about, John, is Emi Martinez, the ex-Arsenal keeper. The guy is just... I know I spoke about the mentality with Ollie Watkins, but, you know, Martinez so far has left me breathless. I think I can't speak highly enough of the guy. Mentality he takes to the game, how solid he looks in goal. I hope he doesn't drop a clanger against Leeds now, because it's going to make me look really stupid. But Martinez has probably been the key signing we've made. The way Villa's defence looks now, and the way kind of he looks in goal, it's a complete turnaround from what we had without Tom Heaton. We were a disaster last season. We were giving up so many easy shots and so many easy chances, and defence, I think Tyrone Mings did his best and his partners did his best at the back, but without Heaton, there was no leadership, and I think Martinez brings so much of that. So look, I'd have paid 30 million for him easy. He's a fantastic goalkeeper, and I think he's completely changed Aston Villa at the back. Fingers crossed that's not a precursor to him dropping an absolute clanger now against Leeds. But yeah, Ross Barkley capped it off as well. I mean, we can speak about Matty Cash, Traore all day, and everyone else who's joined, but Ross Barkley, man, probably gets a bad rap because he exists in kind of like this almost quote-unquote prehistoric era of the Premier League, where it's like 2013 to 2016 before it got fully rebranded and before Villa dropped out. He kind of just existed in this space of time where he was really good and no one took that great notice of him, where I think he got a rough deal because of that move to Chelsea, where he's probably more of a fringe player and you know, injuries and whatever and people choosing other players over him. But look, Ross Barkley, the way you speak about Ross Barkley when he was breaking through should have been the way we were speaking about Jack Grealish right now. And I feel like Villa have done really well. I mean they're paying a lot of money for him, but I feel like they've done really well to get him. And I feel like a midfield of, you know, Douglas Luiz, John McGinn and Ross Barkley is just, it's up there. I don't want to kind of overpromote it, but I'd say that is just such a wonderful signing for a club of Villa's stature to have made.
Let's talk a little bit about the tactics. Where would you say that Dean Smith's Villa are tactically at the moment? How do they look to set up?
I feel like, again, before it was very much a case of, look, if you score 5, we'll score 6. If you score 3, we'll score 4. There's too much intent on the attacking side, and I think that was brought up very well by, I forgot his name, I think it might have been David Anderson, who covers Brentford. And he said, look, Dean Smith at Brentford, very attacking team, very stylish team. There's just so much frailties here defensively that, you know, he has to be brought up. And how Thomas Frank, the guy who took over after Dean Smith succeeded. And that's interesting because, again, it goes back to Smith's delegation. There was a lot of delegation there to Thomas Frank. And I think the overall vision, very much Dean Smith's, where he's trying to, you know, attack and lead on the front foot all the time. But yeah, again, now I think it's a bit more realistic. I think Craig Shakespeare, he's asking Craig Shakespeare, the assistant head coach, a bit more. He's asking John Terry, of course, the assistant head coach, a bit more, Richard O'Kelly, about their ideas. And again, the lockdown period is changing the way the team played, bringing a bit more of a mid block and trying to press really high up the pitch, creating a bit more, you know, creating the pressing triggers that didn't over rely on the team overextending themselves. And they've been a bit more realistic about where they are and who they are and the players they've got. I think the idea that they brought in Ross Barkley and Bertrand Traore and Watkins shouldn't delude them into the problems they had last season. I think they're realistic, you know, they're realistic about who they are. They probably aren't as adventurous as Leeds, I'd say, but they're kind of they're in that same boat as Leeds. I feel like they are an attacking team. They want to be a stylish team. But Aston Villa, they were found out last season and they're a bit more realistic now.
Looking through your games so far this season, it looks as though you've exclusively played some form of a 4-3-3. Do you think Dean Smith is going to stick with this throughout the season, or do you think there's going to be any tweaking along the way?
He's not going to tweak it at all. There'll be minor tweaks, but look, the way we've played since we started has always been kind of the way we played, bar the change after lockdown. We had a 4-3-3 with some minor variations here and there. Then we went to kind of 3 at the back, with leaning towards 2 up front. We played 2 up front at a point during lockdown when we were kind of testing out this new look Villa side. But it's usually always been 4-3-3 and some minor variation on that. I don't see him tweaking it. It will likely be 4-3-3 against Leeds again. But what I would say is I'd place a lot more importance on kind of the roles the players play, more so than the number in the formation, because that three could be three. It wouldn't be, but it would be. It could be three kind of defensive midfielders, rather than the variation that Luiz, McGinn, and Barkley would provide. But yeah, John, it's absolutely going to be a 4-3-3.
Well, let's talk about that midfield then, because last season Jack Grealish was played as a deeper midfielder at times. He's obviously been given more freedom now playing on the outside of a front three. What do you think the midfield is going to look like for you guys for the rest of the season?
I think Jack Grealish is probably more than likely going to be playing on the outside. So he plays on the wing now, but I wouldn't call him a winger or a wide midfielder. He kind of does what he wants. It's a bit of a free roll. But he kind of imbalances other teams. He drags a lot of attention to his side, and it freed up Ross Barkley a lot against Leeds. Usually frees up the striker, usually frees up John McGinn as well. So I don't see him coming into the middle. As for his best position, I'm not too sure. I feel like on the wing, he's really effective for Villa. He's far more effective for Villa on the wing because he's dragging a lot of attention to the other side of the pitch and just creating a kind of an imbalance for the middle to succeed, or I don't know, the quote-unquote weaker players in the middle to succeed. But the freedom outside, I think for Villa, that's his best position. Maybe for the national team or another team. I don't want to think about Grealish moving to another team, but he should be playing in the middle and he should be the focal point. Villa's focal point is quite imbalanced because a lot of the ball's going to him. He's an out ball for Villa. So, yeah, it's his best position for the time being.
And how much does Villa playing well equate to Jack Grealish playing well? Should Leeds target Grealish to try and stymie Villa in any sense?
One of the games I remember Leeds being incredibly successful in was when Calvin Phillips did a marking job on so this was the infamous game, the fair play game, where Calvin Phillips did a job on Grealish. He followed him across the pitch, probably getting a few cheeky kicks in here or there, annoyed him with his physical presence, and annoyed him by tracking him across the pitch, because that's Calvin Phillips does an exceptionally good job of what he does really well, and that's not necessarily the dark arts of football, but his positioning, the way he follows the player and the way he tracks a player, he's quite an intimidating presence, especially if I didn't have the abilities of Grealish. I'd be very worried about being marked and tracked by Calvin Phillips. But yeah, he should absolutely target him. The one thing I would say is last season, it probably would have affected Villa more than this season, because look, the way I would rate Ross Barkley is almost as high as Grealish. The way I'd rate John McGinn is almost as high as Grealish. You can't forget about that two-pronged attack in the middle now, because McGinn's an incredibly, he's an incredibly effective player, and Ross Barkley is an incredibly effective player. So I feel like Villa, look, if Bertrand Traoré is playing on the other wing, he could be a really surprising threat. So I feel like you can't, the only way to deal with Grealish is to commit bodies to him, but now you have to kind of worry about the threat that Villa have, possibly on the other flank, possibly up front, and possibly in the middle. They didn't have that last season if you stopped Grealish last season, and it was quite hard to do so. Some teams could. Leeds did it again, like we reflect on that fair play game. Leeds did it quite well. But yeah, you should target him, you should try and stop him, but you cannot forget about the possible threat elsewhere.
So we talked about the midfield. Beyond that, how do you think Villa will set up against Leeds? What will their lineup be?
So it should be injuries. I don't know what will happen in this Leicester game, if hopefully Tyrone Mings or Konsa are uninjured, but it'll be Martinez in goal. It will be a back four, so you got Matty Cash on the right, you'll have Matty Target on the left, flying up the flanks, Tyrone Mings bossing it at the back, hopefully alongside Ezri Konsa. Then you've got Douglas Luiz as the deep lying midfielder, a little bit ahead of him it'll be McGinn, and at the top of that it will be Ross Barkley. On the left, you'll have Grealish, of course. On the right, you should have Trezeguet. I don't know if Bertrand Traoré will be starting unless he really succeeds coming off the bench against Leicester, because I assume he'll be coming off the bench against Leicester. Up front, of course, it'll be Ollie Watkins. We're quite rigid with that at the moment. I expect it will change throughout the season, depending on the little tweaks here and there, finding out things about players. Any signings we make in January, stuff like that, will change it, but for now it'll be pretty much what it says on the tin.
How's the international break treated you? Are you missing anyone?
No, we was a bit worried about Grealish though, because I think he had a wrapping on his shin or leg against Wales, and he looked like he took a knock against Wales, but as far as the injury report is, bar any outstanding injuries of course to Tom Heaton and Wesley, I think we're all good for now.
One of the questions I always ask when we get opposition fans on the show is, which of your players need to play well in order for you to beat Leeds? I guess you're going to say Jack Grealish, but what are the players that you think need to do well for Villa to get something out of this game?
I think the most important player is obviously going to be Grealish, but look, again, going back to the previous question, you can't ignore the threat in the middle and especially up front. I think if Ollie Watkins has a good game, it'll be quite tricky for Leeds to deal with Villa, because they're going to have to concentrate on all areas of the pitch, and I assume they would. They're exceptionally well-drilled team, but look, if Ollie Watkins performs well, Villa should be able to get some kind of result, even if he had to draw out of the game.
I never ask for predictions on this show. Feel free to offer one if you want. What I do ask is, how do you see the flow of the game going? How do you think that it will unfold as we watch it?
I really do expect it to kind of be like a bit of a basketball game, if I'm honest, with both teams just creating a lot of scoring chances. I don't think Leeds are not the type of side to really sit back against a team like Villa. And again, Villa will be looking at Leeds in the exact same way. They'd see it as like they won't be looking at Leeds as, the big club they are, or the team they'll be looking at them as recently promoted team. And a team they should be taking 3 points off. So I don't expect them to drop deeper unless Leeds really force them to. I expect it will be an entertaining affair, hopefully for the neutral. Whenever I say that, John, it's a nil-nil. I do expect it to be really entertaining. I expect the best team to win. Hopefully there'll be no like stupid drama like last time we played. Hopefully it'll be a really fair match, and we will be speaking about result more than anything that occurs off the pitch or even on the pitch ball when the ball stops. I really hope it's a fair game, and that it highlights the abilities of these two teams, because they're two underrated teams and they're two fantastic teams. And I really hope, I know it's before the eyes of the watching public on a Friday night, I really hope it gives everyone a chance. I hope that Leeds can stake their claim to be more than a recently promoted team and push up the table without that affecting Villa's results, because I want Villa to get 3 points.
Well, James, it's always a pleasure to chat to you. What is the best way for our listeners to follow what you're doing on social media?
So you can just find me at Jamer Rushton or at Claret Blue Pod, which is the podcast to help run with the Birmingham Mail.
Well, as I said, it's always a pleasure. I hope you enjoy the game on Friday.
Cheers, man. Thank you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
So that was James Rushton, an audience engagement producer at Reach PLC and a regular on the Claret and Blue podcast. Joe, what did you make of that?
It was interesting to hear about the trajectory that Villa have sort of gone through after being promoted. James is sort of saying, you know, they used to try and outscore the opponent, and that led to defensive frailties, and now they're sort of a more realistic mid-block team. I thought that was really interesting that they've sort of had this change of style, and also that they were sort of overly reliant on Grealish in their first promoted season, and now with the addition of Barkley and a couple of the others that he mentions, that they're a bit of a stronger side. And it was really interesting to hear about that from an inside point of view, because I guess I sort of still thought that they were overly reliant on Grealish, but I guess in these first few games Barkley has sort of proved that he has got something, and that he can be another addition in that area.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because with Villa, they were just so close to going down. I mean, not only were they almost mathematically condemned to going down, and they had to pull off a result against, I think it was at Arsenal or something late on in the season. They also had that ghost goal, the goal that was given that wasn't given that was a goal against Sheffield United. And it's just remarkable, isn't it, that, you know, the exigencies of just pure fate there have meant that they've gone from being in the Championship to being top of the Premier League. It's like one of those Leicester City moments, really. But yeah, Tom, how about you? What did you pick up from what James had to say?
Well, the main thing I picked up on was that he's planning to listen to it on the radio, and I would say, why? Just pirate it. That's what I'm going to do. and these are not the views of All Stats, aren't we? But I would advise everyone, no one should be paying the £14.95, and everyone should pirate the game. That's the first thing. Villa are an interesting team, aren't they? As you said, it does seem like they've really sensibly added to the squad and made it better over the summer. I know we're going to talk about that soon anyway, but it does look like they look like a good team now, with a really solid base and a clear way of playing. And I think they can be hopeful of a solid mid-table finish, at least, like with the team they've got together.
We need to talk about the start of the season. It's a strange situation, because when I spoke to James, it was before the Leicester game. And at that point, they'd only had 3 games, because their first game, I think, was supposed to be against City, and that was postponed because of the Champions League running on. So they've played they played three. They had two against two of the weakest teams in the league in Fulham and Sheffield United, at least according to the way that the league has gone so far. And then I guess you can write off the Liverpool result at that point as an outlier. But then they've picked up that result of the weekend against Leicester. Now, again, I've watched that game and it was. I mean, Villa looked fine. Leicester didn't look particularly dangerous. And in the end, they sort of scored a late goal from miles out. But at the same time, you've got to get to a point where you've got to you can't think of Villa as being relegation candidates this season, surely. So how do we feel about Villa's start to the season, Tom?
I must admit, I don't think I've watched them for a full 90 minutes this season, but the bits that I've seen, they look James was saying in the interview, they just seem a lot more multifaceted than they did last season when everything kind of went through Grealish. And the addition of Barkley especially seems to have added an extra dimension to their attack. And I think having John McGinn back is a massive thing as well, because I think he was injured for a lot of last season, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. And I remember him being a great player in the Championship. So, I'm sure they won't, you know, they're obviously not going to win every game, but, you know, you do need to win those games against Fulham and Sheffield United. And, you know, as Leeds fans, if we hadn't won our games against Fulham and Sheffield United, we wouldn't have won any games. So, you know, you have to commend them for doing that and then adding to it.
Yeah, and I guess that at the same time, no one is expecting Villa's current run to continue. I think they've scored 12 goals so far from about 7 XG, so they're nearly running double their XG, which is, I don't think anyone would disagree, that is it's just unrealistic to expect that kind of form to continue.
Yeah, I think that Liverpool game presumably massively adds to that, because the three of the goals were wild deflections, weren't they? So
yeah, I don't know what the XG for that game was, but I'm sure it probably wasn't much higher than about 3.
So I think I remember reading it was about 3.5, something like that.
Right, yeah. So they've picked up about 3 to 2.5 XG over performance there. We'll see how that run of form continues, but there's surely no way that they're going to continue at that pace. Joe, how do you rate Villa right now? Is it just a case that, you know, we're probably erring on the side of overrating them and underrating them?
I would say so. Yeah, I think Tom's right. And you know, the Liverpool game was an outlier. Three of them were huge deflections. One of them was a gift from Adrian. Liverpool just played terribly. That was just an awful performance from them. So obviously, you know, you can't read into that too much. And I don't think James was reading into that too much on the preview. I think he was pretty level-headed about that being an outlier. And then the result against Leicester, that it probably could have been a draw quite easily, could have been a 0-0 draw. And then Barkley had a good shot on target and it went in. I don't think they can keep it up. And obviously, the longer that they do keep winning, the more likely it is that they eventually break that streak. You know, I think that if they beat us, that'll be 5 wins in a row, and surely it can't go on much longer than that. So I don't think they are going to be in a relegation scrap in the same way as they were last year, because there are teams that look far worse at this stage of the season. But I'm not insanely worried, you know, relative to their position in the table. I don't see them as a second place team, you know.
Yeah, we talk about game state a lot on this podcast, and obviously game state is, you know, and that happened for Villa against Liverpool. They went up a few goals very early on, and then obviously from that point on, that just sort of changes the whole tenor of the game, and Liverpool probably just sort of accepted that they were going to lose and probably just relaxed a little bit. But there's also something like league state, I think, as well, which is the higher up the league you are early on, the more the pressure is off for you, and it can sort of change the way that you approach the rest of the season. So I've no doubt that a good start, regardless of how it is perhaps overrated per underlying numbers, I'm sure that good start will still be will suit them well, and will allow them to relax, and will allow them to you know, the pressure's off for them. I mean, even looking at this game on Friday, they'll just see it as a free hit. They'll know that we've got a lot of injuries, and they'll probably come out with a fair amount of positivity, with an expectation they'll get something from the game. But it will be interesting to see how their season unfolds, certainly. Let's talk about the tactics. How do we feel about Villa tactically? I've watched I've watched all of their games actually this season through, partly because I really wanted to understand what tactics they were playing. But yeah, it's fascinating stuff. They tended to play a 4-3-3. They were playing Grealish a little bit deeper in previous seasons, but they're now playing him on the outside of a front three. And they're actually quite a high pressy team. I mean, I say that they do sit into a mid block a lot of the time, but they're happy to press high in certain situations. But they're also happy to sit a little bit deeper and have the two wide attackers drop in alongside their midfielders. You'll probably see Jack Grealish on the edge of his own box quite a bit, which I was impressed with. You know, he is a creative player, but he's happy to get back and help out defensively. And then Grealish himself actually gives them that huge creative edge, and a lot of their attacking players is based around trying to get Grealish on the ball. And I think what Grealish does so well is he wins fouls at just a remarkable rate. And that's a combination of like him being just insanely good on the ball, but also he also knows how to game the system, and he wins fouls that way. And between those two things, you know, if you've got decent set piece players, then and Jack Grealish winning free kicks on the edge of the box as he does, then you're onto a bit of a winner. And then the other thing is that he's so good on the ball, he just gets into the box, and as soon as he's in the box, they start overloading, and they get a lot of goals just sort of from working their way into the box from the edges, and the ball falling to someone like Ross Barkley patrolling at the edge of the box, and it just popping out for him as well. So they're a really tough prospect to face, particularly when you take into account what we've been saying about Leeds against Wolves, where, you know, once the man marking system is sort of beaten, you see players sort of running one-on-one on at speed opponents, and the prospect of Jack Grealish doing that and having Villa sort of pushing high and looking to create chances is a little bit of a scary one. But anyone, let's talk about the tactics. I mean, I don't know how much you guys have watched of Villa. I wouldn't blame you for not watching that much of them, but has anyone got any thoughts on the tactics of Villa?
I think Leeds' defensive system might bode well for us, in that the man marking thing could go well. We've seen it with Calvin Phillips just doing a job on Jack Grealish the season before last in the fair play game. And I think, you know, it has potential that Stroik or whoever's in that role can do a similar job. I think they absolutely have to play well for Leeds, whoever plays in the CDM role. But it can be said that a man-marking job on Grealish could break the whole game down and could break down Aston Villa's whole outlet and creativity.
The thing is, it would be whoever's playing on our right wing, right, rather than whoever's playing in central midfield, who would have to mark him this time, because I presume he was playing in the middle back in that fair play game.
Yeah, he was.
So
this is one of the next questions that I've got. I mean, I've asked how do we approach them tactically. We can talk about how we account for their high-ish press and high-energy stuff, but the Jack Grealish problem is an interesting one. I mean, you could feasibly have Calvin Phillips rip as his marker, I think, even as a wide player, because he's quite fluid and moves around quite a bit. But I suspect, as Tom says, that we probably see Luke Ayling. You know, we've seen Luke Ayling do that sort of job before, where he follows a sort of fluid left winger, let's call him, around. So he did it with Sadio Mane. We saw a bit of it against Wolves with Pedence and Neto as well. I do think that is going to be really a really interesting battle if we can keep Grealish quiet. Because like you said, the last time we played, Grealish was playing as like an eight in a double pivot. So he was sort of further away from the goal, in, I think, a less dangerous position than he is when he's in a wide position. So, yeah, how do we feel about that issue then? If he is playing in the wide left area, do we just expect Luke Ayling to be the one who covers him? And if it is Pascal who's marking him, how do we feel about that as well, Tom?
I'd be perfectly comfortable Ayling handling him. I think Ayling, out of all our defenders, is probably even included in Dallas, is someone that I like him tracking players across the pitch, and then if he recovers the ball, being in unexpected areas, and I think he's a an intelligent user of the ball in terms of what he does after he gets the ball back as well. So I think he's very well suited to, you know, popping up in unexpected areas after just dispossessing the opponent in that regard. If it ends up being strike, which I don't think it will, because as far as I can tell, Grealish has been playing on the wing all season. That's one thing I'm not quite sure about with a strike. He and I don't mean that as a negative. I mean, I genuinely am not sure. He always looks very good on the ball. I'm not sure that we've really seen him have to do that sort of really critical man-marking job yet when he's played in that role. Maybe I'm wrong, but from the games he played there last season, they were mostly quite low-pressure games, apart from, was it Barnsley that he played? And it was much more high-pressure. But again, Barnsley played a 4-4-2, didn't they? So it was a bit of a... There wasn't that sort of central attacking player in the same way that Grealish was when he did it, when Phillips did a job on him. So that's an interesting thing with strike, whether I'd like to see that, whether he's, because sometimes it seems like his main weakness is his lack of agility on the turn. And if you're marking someone really tight, then that can be a big problem if they manage to slip away from you.
And I guess we should talk about the worst case scenario as well, because I feel as though if all of the players are injured that could be injured, we're going to have Ayling probably playing as a right centre back. And then Cock as a left centre back, and then presumably Dallas as a right back. So then it would be Dallas playing up against Grealish. How do we feel about that, Tom?
I think that'd be okay as well. I think one thing we know about Dallas is that he'll stick to his task and he doesn't switch off. Certainly out of possession, I don't think his brain switches off. He sticks to what he's doing. So that wouldn't hugely bother me either. It'd be more the knock-on effects on the rest of the team that would be a problem there. Because who do we then play as in the Calvin role? Because Dallas would be one of the options, right? And I know none of us particularly like the idea of him playing there, but who else would play there?
Have we ever seen Dallas playing as like an out-and-out CDM?
I don't think we have, which is why when people assume that that's what's going to happen, I'm a little bit sceptical of it. Because we see him play as an eight sometimes, and I think he can do that because the range of passing you need for that role is not as vast as the range of passing that you ideally need for that central defensive midfield role. Yep. And I think even Dallas's biggest fans would not say that, you know, he's an excellent passer, long-range passer of the ball. So, I mean, it almost makes me think that maybe we'd drop Click back there and play either Shackleton or Alioski in midfield, because as Bielsa's been talking of Alioski as a eight.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And that absolutely terrifies me.
The thing is, when you have shitloads of injuries, there are always going to be problems no matter how good your squad is. I think it's very unlucky that we've managed to have all these injuries in the exact same area of the team. You know, if it had been one of the wingers who got injured, it'd be basically fine.
This reminds me of that Gogglebox meme where it's like, well, we always know that you're going to have to move players around with injury. And it's like, yeah, but not fucking Alioski in central midfield, Chris. but yeah, we'll see. Well, we'll talk about the injuries in a little bit. Oh dear, this is really not doing a lot for my health. But let's talk a little bit about then the high press. Because I think this is something that I do think is interesting, because they do have a really high energy press. I think that they actually out energy a lot of teams, which is quite interesting. Obviously they sort of did Liverpool with the high line, but I feel as though in terms of actual gameplay, they do break the game down quite a lot. They put in a lot of tackles, they put up a lot of pressure, and then they also sort of look for fouls themselves. And so I expect the game will be quite bitty on Friday. I expect it will be very stop start. I expect the fan base to be absolutely livid at Jack Grealish every time he goes down. And I wonder whether or not we think that we'll be this is a sort of game style that will suit us. Whether or not you think that, for example, our ability to play through a high press or a mid press will actually just mean that we get at Villa's defence a little bit more. And this is one of the things I've noticed against the weaker teams that they played. Villa don't actually do a lot of defending per their defenders, because usually they put so much pressure on in the midfield areas that the defence aren't really in a huge amount of sort of classic defensive situations. So, Joe, how do you feel about that aspect of the game? Do you think it would be nice to play against a team who are going to push a little bit higher, maybe come a little bit stronger? And if we can play through that press, then we'll be presented with some dangerous attacking moments, especially after Monday, where we just came up against a tour de force in a deep block.
Yeah, of course it's nice to play against teams that want to come out and want to attack, and I think that's something that Leeds, that's a situation that Leeds really thrive in. Is, you know, we've seen it against City, we've seen it against Liverpool. When teams come out to attack us, you know, we can just bypass the press, or, you know, we just seem to switch on and we just seem to be a lot better than watching one of these standard sort of championship games where they're packing 11 behind the ball and you know, we just have to break them down. I think you're right about the Leeds fan base being livid against Jack Grealish. I think I'm already quite angry at him just thinking about it.
Absolutely.
When you mentioned earlier that he wins a lot of fouls, and I was just rolling my eyes because I just thought, oh, he's a diving bloody bastard. You know, all the pundits seem to say, oh, he's the most fouled player in the Premier League. I remember that stat last year and they were all praising him for it. And I just thought, no, it's just because he's a diver. It doesn't make him any good. But yeah, so I think it's going to be quite a bitty game. I think they're going to be looking for fouls. And actually, that was one of the things that did lead to in the fair play game, that did sort of tip that game over the edge, was that Cooper allegedly fouled, I can't remember who it was, one of their players, in the centre circle, and then that led to us scoring. So I think, you know, there could be lots and lots of little fouls, and it could be breaking the game down into lots of short periods of play. And actually, I think it would benefit Leeds just to maintain their composure. It might be that not having the fans there is good in a way, because we don't feel the hostility and we don't get too angry, and just maintain their composure and do what we do best, which is just playing nice football, nice quick passing. And I think we can get through the press that way, and like you say, get out their defence and hopefully create a good few chances for ourselves.
I do have a section on Leeds' injury issues, but I do feel as though we've covered them and I don't have any interest in talking about them anymore. So let's talk about the wider squad selection then. How do we see the rest of the squad lining up? So I guess that's who will be starting up front and who will be playing on the wing, Tom?
I think it'll be exactly the same as it has been, with Harrison and Costa, Bamford up front, Rodrigo in midfield again, probably, and, you know, the rest of it is all dictated by injuries, isn't it? So it's very much as you were. Bielsa's not going to change anything for the sake of it.
In terms of the guys who came in on Monday, Jan Poveda and Rafinha came on as well. Would you like to see a little bit more of maybe Rafinha on Friday night?
Definitely. I mean, he looked decent enough in the 8 minutes that he had. But I do like that he brought on Poveda before Rafinha, because I think it's important that, you know, if Poveda's working hard in training and doing the right things, that he is rewarded for it and not immediately cast aside when we get something a bit more expensive and shiny. And but yeah, I mean, I what I'm interested in is whether Rafinha can play on the left wing. I've talked about that on this podcast before, and I think that is where he came on against Wolves, isn't it? So I'm interested to see if we have a legitimate, viable alternative to Harrison there, because Harrison was really off it against Wolves for me. And to have someone that we could swap out quite early on, if he is having a bad game, I think it would add a lot to, it would really sort of change the tenor of certain games, I think, where we're just not getting what we need from Harrison.
Yeah, and I think it'd be nice to see Rafinha get a run out against a team that might be a little bit more open in the wing back area. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him have a run out. This is a question that I always ask: which players are we expecting good performances from in order for us to beat Villa? I think this question has a whole new valence, given that half of the players will have to play well for us to survive, given the injury issues. But Joe, which players do you think we need to have playing well for us to do okay against Villa?
I think no matter where he plays, I think Click will have to have a good game, whether that's at CDM or whether that's standard sort of number eight, because, you know, he's one of our most consistent players. He normally, you know, doesn't do anything outstanding, doesn't do anything crazy, but he just keeps everything ticking over. And if he is expected to drop deep into the CDM role, then he's really going to have to be on it. It's actually quite a good situation that we have so many great attacking options. That maybe is one positive to take from, you know, this mini injury crisis, is that we have plenty of attacking options. So I'm not sure, like Tom says, if Harrison has a bad game, then, you know, he can come off at half time for Rafinha or for Poveda and do some switching around up there. So I think it's mostly the defence. I think we're looking for the players that are going to be in unusual positions or positions that they don't necessarily play in every single week. They're going to be the ones that are really going to have to step up. And then hopefully the many, many attacking options that we have can just sort of do their normal jobs and play well.
Yeah. How about you, Tom?
Yeah, I think whoever plays in that central defensive midfield role, the Calvin role, whoever it is, I think that's going to be very important. And also Bamford, I think if we're going to be trying to play through their press, it's very important that Bamford's going to be able to hold the ball up when he gets it and you know, deliver it to one of the wingers or whoever's rushing beyond him. So, yeah, I'll be looking for a good performance from him as well.
The question then is, how do we see the game unfolding? And I think this is a really tough one to really call, given the injury situation, but also the fact that it's still quite hard, I think, to judge where Villa are at, where their level is at. So, yeah, Tom, how do you expect the game to unfold on Friday?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's a weird one, Villa, because that Villa game that we mentioned a few times in this podcast, the fair play game, I wasn't at the match, but it had one of the weirdest atmospheres for me of any Leeds game I've ever watched. Like, because we just confirmed that we couldn't go up automatically, essentially, and yet there was this sort of weird needle to the game, like we were trying really hard to prove that we weren't finished. And it almost like felt like I was watching it like slightly removed from my body, because it was such a surreal experience the entire game. So it'll be nice to finally put that one to bed, at least. In terms of the actual game flow and how it's going to go, it could be a bit like, it feels like the games where we do get pressed early, high, they're usually quite chaotic for the first 15, 20 minutes while we're figuring out exactly what we need to do to counter that press. So I'm expecting a chaotic first, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes.
How about you, Joe? How are you seeing the game sort of happening?
I can't quite decide, actually, because James on the opposition view said that he expects it to be a bit of a basketball game. And I can't quite decide whether I agree or not, because I was looking at Villa's stats and they had 35% possession against Fulham, where they won 3-0, and 30% against Liverpool, which was obviously 7-2. So there's been a couple of games where they've really not had much possession at all. I think against Leicester it was a bit more 50-50. So that would sort of suggest to me that we're gonna dominate the ball. It's going to be another sort of 70-30. I think it really depends on our squad. I think, like you say, Villa will know what injuries we have by that point. And if it's a just mismatch of players that haven't played together in the back four or back five, then I think Villa will come out at us a bit more and make it a bit more of a basketball game. If Cooper is playing and Stryker's in the CDM role, I sort of expect us to dominate possession a bit more, and Villa probably look for those small moments to let Grealish and Barkley just get their creativity on.
Yeah, it's interesting what you're saying about possession, because I've watched the Fulham game and I thought Fulham caused them a lot of problems. Like Fulham actually quite a good build-up team in the early build-up phases. The problem is that they're not very creative in the final third. But also, both the Fulham game and the Liverpool game were sort of game stated, in the sense that I think they were about 2-0 up after about 16 minutes against Fulham, and they were 3-0 up against Liverpool in about 16 minutes. So I wonder whether or not maybe that's skewed the possession stats a little bit. But I do think you're right. I think that this is going to be a question of us dominating versus them being efficient and clinical in front of goal, because they just are. They're so brutally efficient at the moment, and you know, look, you can't account for that. There's nothing to say that they'll be efficient on Friday. They could have a really terrible performance in front of goal, for all we know, and that could be the difference between them scoring two or three or not scoring at all. I think that's probably a reality with most teams, but I think with Villa maybe a little bit more, when you have players like Barkley and Grealish as your creative outlets, who are just going to take maybe more difficult shots than other teams will try, and sometimes it will come off and sometimes it won't. But I do think that I think you're right. I think it will be a game where it will be us dominating possession and them sort of looking to break quickly, looking to sort of stymie us by just keeping pressure on in the mid block areas and just stop the ball from getting through to their defence as much as possible. But it should be an interesting game. It's a shame really that we're going to be so blighted by injuries, because I think full squad against full squad, it would be a really interesting matchup. But that's not to say I don't think it will not still be an interesting matchup, but I do think it changes things to a certain extent. So there you have it. That's the All Stats Aren't We preview for the Aston Villa game. Keep an eye out for a tactics thread. I'm going to start working on that this afternoon when I have the time. So hopefully that will be out tomorrow. We've also just put out our review podcast for the Wolves game, given it happened 2 days ago. So do make sure you check that out as well. No doubt you probably will have listened to that before this, but if you haven't, do check it out. And then finally, if you do like our content and want to get more, then why not check out our Patreon site? Patreon is a subscriber platform that allows us to put out bonus content for our listeners. So we've got extra video analysis, we've got extra podcasts, and we've got extra written stuff over there as well. And we're also building a quite nice community over there. So why not head over to www.patreon.com/allstatsaren'twe and check it out. Three people who have done that are Hamza Tafsi, Grant, and Patrick O'Shea. And that brings us to the end of the podcast. We'll be back on Sunday with a review episode, I think. But until then, all that remains for me to do is to say thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
And thank you, Joe.
Cheers.
And enjoy the game on Friday.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.